Welcome to today's conference call. At this time, your lines have been placed on listen-only for today's conference. During the question-and-answer portion of our call, you will be prompted to press star 1 on your touch-tone phone. Please be sure to record your name and your affiliation so that you may be announced to ask your question. Conference is also being recorded, and if you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. I will now turn our conference over to Ms. Lola Russell with the CDC Press Office. Ma'am, you may proceed.
Thank you so much. Good morning. Today we will be providing a review regarding the release of two reports. The first one being the foodborne illness acquired in the United States, major pathogens, and foodborne illness acquired in the United States, unspecified agents. These reports have been released in today's online edition of CDC's Emerging Infectious Disease Journal. Both versions are now available. This is a report of the burden of foodborne diseases in the United States. The report provides new and more precise estimates on illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths from foodborne illnesses acquired in this country. Our speaker today will be Dr. Chris Braden, that's B-R-A-D-E-N, Director of CDC's Division of Foodborne, Waterborne, and Environmental Diseases. Elaine Scallon, Assistant Clinical Professor at the University of Colorado Boulder, and the former lead for CDC's FoodNet team, is the lead author of these reports. She is also available to discuss any methodology questions that may arise. After the briefing by Dr. Braden, we will open the lines for one question and one follow-up from the reporters on the line. We have some excellent resources available online, which we expect will be very helpful for you. Those resources may be found at www.cdc.gov/foodborne. That's www.cdc.gov/foodborne. If you have any additional questions after this briefing, please call the CDC Press Office at 404-639-3286, and we'll be happy to assist you. The transcript from this briefing in both manuscript and audio files will be posted to the CDC Division of Media Relations website within a few hours. I will now turn it over to Dr. Braden.
Good morning, and thank you for being with us today to learn about CDC's new foodborne illness estimates. I'm delighted to be joined by CDC's lead author for this report, Dr. Elaine Scallon, and some other CDC foodborne experts who may be best suited to answer specific questions. Today, we are publishing the new estimates of the number of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths caused by food each year in the United States. These are the first comprehensive estimates of foodborne illness in the United States since estimates published in 1999, and the first national estimates that focus solely on illnesses caused by foods eaten here in the United States. I'd like to start with an overview of the research findings and what they mean, and then I'll go back into more detail. First, we want to emphasize that these estimates indicate that 1 in 6 Americans, or 48 million people, get sick each year. 128,000 are hospitalized, and about 3,000 die each year from foodborne illnesses in the United States. These illnesses are associated with billions in health care costs and also have a substantial human cost in severe illnesses and, in some cases, long-term health effects that linger after the initial illness subsides. With this many illnesses affecting Americans each year, prevention and interventions to address these diseases are vitally important. These are preventable diseases. For many of these diseases, we know what interventions work to prevent them, and we need to do more to lower the impact of these diseases in the United States. Let me go into a little bit more detail about what is causing the illnesses and how we develop these estimates. During the past decade, we've made great strides in understanding foodborne illness and in using this knowledge to better prevent illness and to rapidly detect and respond to outbreaks. We know we now have more, and in some cases better, data on foodborne diseases that we had in 1999, and we have refined our methods to try to develop the most accurate estimates we can. This research is very important because it provides a window into which of the 31 known foodborne pathogens are causing most harm to the public and which cause most severe illness. By knowing this, CDC and our regulatory partners can better target those pathogens so we can have the better help to protect the nation's food supply. The reports today also can help us understand what we still need to learn about what's causing illness by providing estimates about other causes of foodborne illness, which we're calling unspecified agents. These are agents that have yet to be discovered, those that are not yet recognized as causing foodborne illness, and agents for which there is not enough data to estimate the amount of illnesses they cause. As I mentioned, these are the first comprehensive estimates since 1999, and they do show fewer illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths than estimated at that time. However, the lower numbers are largely the result of more, and in some cases better, data than we had in 1999, and also innovative new methods that we have developed to calculate the current estimates. For this reason, we really can't compare the two estimates to measure trends, as tempting as that may be. There is evidence that some foodborne illnesses have decreased. In a separate analysis, not included in the papers being released today, CDC tracks trends in some important foodborne pathogens every year in the FoodNet surveillance system. We have seen a decrease of about 20% in illnesses due to the major pathogens under surveillance in that system during the past 10 years. We are proud of the success, and I don't want to in any way to minimize this accomplishment. However, the pathogens in FoodNet tracks are only a small fraction of the pathogens included in the new estimate. So as I mentioned, the vast majority of the differences between the 1999 and the current estimates can be explained by improved data and methods. Either way, this is encouraging news for Americans and for the public health. It means that fewer people are getting sick from the foods they eat, and that we now know more than ever about the pathogens that are causing illnesses, so we can focus on our efforts on those. These strides would not have been possible without an effective use of resources and strong partnership between CDC and the nation's food regulators, the FDA and the USDA. I want to be clear that the 1999 estimate was the best available at the time. It used the best methods and the best data that was available. But since then, we have more and better data to work from, and other studies that have increased our understanding of some foodborne pathogens, which has also influenced the numbers. We use this new knowledge to develop the estimates we're releasing today, which we believe to be the most accurate to date. Now, let me talk a little bit about the specific pathogens that are causing the most illnesses. And these are, what I will be talking about are among known pathogens of foodborne illnesses. This is not including the unspecified agents. So among the known pathogens, Salmonella is the leading cause of hospitalizations and deaths. It was responsible for about 28% of deaths and 35% of hospitalizations. We estimate that about 90% of all illnesses due to known pathogens and the associated hospitalizations and deaths are caused by the following seven pathogens: Salmonella, norovirus, Campylobacter, Toxoplasma, E. coli 0157, Listeria, and Clostridium perfringens. In terms of overall illnesses, we estimate that norovirus caused nearly 60% of the total illnesses that are due to the known pathogens. We will have more details of the impact of each of these pathogens, including the percent of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths estimated by pathogen, available after this call on CDC's website, www.cdc.gov/foodborne burden. This is the same website mentioned before. Though we have seen clear progress in the past 10 years, these numbers illustrate a very real impact of foodborne illnesses in the United States. It affects tens of millions of Americans each year, and I repeat, that translates to 1 in 6 Americans ill from foodborne illnesses each year. It remains a substantial public health problem. A lot more work still needs to be done, for our new estimates will serve as a foundation for the future to help in the development of food safety policies in targeting the known causes of illnesses and deaths and in guiding CDC as we work to uncover the causes of foodborne illnesses yet to be discovered. If we could reduce foodborne illnesses by just 1%, we would keep about 500,000 people each year from getting sick from foods that they eat. CDC remains committed to our role in helping to safeguard the American food supply and to prevent foodborne illnesses, no matter what the cause. The full report is available on the website of CDC's Emerging Infectious Diseases Journal, which is publishing it online today. Their website is www.cdc.gov/EID, or Emerging Infectious Diseases, EID. We'll have much more detailed information on the numbers themselves and the methods available at, again, www.cdc.gov/foodborne burden. To learn more about food safety, you can also visit www.foodsafety.gov. Thank you again for being with us today. We can now take questions.
Thank you. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press *1 on your touch-tone phone. Please be sure to record your name and affiliation to ask your question. And once again, we do ask that you limit your questions to one question and one follow-up. Once again, please record your name and affiliation at this time. We have a question from Miriam Falco with CNN. Your line is open.
Good morning. Thanks for taking questions. One quick note, these are the 2011 estimates, even though we haven't finished 2010 yet, correct? So this is a projection of how many people will get sick?
So actually, we call them the 2011 estimates because the actual publication date for the journal is 2011. It's a January 2011 edition, even though they're being published today. But the data that is used to estimate the illnesses actually spanned a number of years, centering around 2006.
Okay. So my real question is then, you listed the 7 most common sources of foodborne illness, but in how many cases, and I don't know if you can tell this from your research, how much people assume it's because the peanut butter I got was messed up or the tomatoes were contaminated. How many of these foodborne illnesses, though, are because of improper food handling, people leaving their potato salad out too long or using the same cutting board that they cut the chicken on to cut their salad?
So what's included in the estimates that we're releasing today is not a breakdown by how the foods became contaminated, or, for that matter, which foods are responsible for the most illnesses. These estimates are just giving us the total number of illnesses out there. What these numbers are important for, however, is to be able to then go forward with these analyses to take these total number of illnesses and attribute them to specific food commodities, all right, say fruits and vegetables or poultry or beef. So that's an analysis that is underway, and we hope to have more information to be more specific about what CDC, FDA, and USDA can do to protect the food supply in the future.
Do you have a follow-up, Miriam?
No, I think I already used my two questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, please.
Our next question is from Lindsay Layton with The Washington Post. Your line is open.
Thanks very much for taking my call. So, Dr. Braden, when we look at the 1999 numbers from the Mead report, and they referenced, I think the mortality figure was like 5,000 a year, and that's been, you know, what we often reference when we're right about foodborne illness. This new set of data refers to 3,000 deaths a year. So it would be erroneous for us to say that the number of deaths or the fatality rate has decreased. We can't compare the 3,000 to the old figure of 5,000. You're saying that they're measured in different ways, and so it would be wrong to assume that the fatality rate has decreased.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the differences between the estimates in 1999 and the estimates in 2011 are mainly due to the data that we now have that's better than before and the methods that we've used that are improved from before. So, again, they're not comparable for the, you know, in order to measure trends. What we would say is that these numbers are now the most precise that we have of estimates of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths in the United States, and with the emphasis that, you know, these are, any way you cut it, a lot of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths, and there's more that we need to do.
Thank you.
Do you have a follow-up?
No, thanks.
Okay, thanks. Next question, please.
Our next question is from Jane Norman with Congressional Quarterly. Your line is open.
Yeah. Hi, Dr. Braden. Thanks for taking my question. Just maybe to follow up a little bit on that, if you could just explain to me why there hasn't been any new data since 1999 and whether you mentioned going forward you're going to be diving deeper into these numbers. Is there going to be more frequent updating of these overall estimates?
So just a little explanation of these estimates. You know, the data that were generated in order for us to be able to accomplish these analyses were actually developed and collected over time, over years. Since the publication of the 1999 estimates, we have worked to improve our surveillance, improve our laboratory methods, for instance, in order to detect norovirus, improve our methods. And the data that was used to generate these estimates were actually data that were collected over a number of years, as I explained before. They center probably around 2006. But this is not something that we can just generate year by year. We will continue to improve our methods, improve our laboratory surveillance, improve our case surveillance in order to provide more precise estimates in the future, but it's not something we can do year by year.
So we shouldn't expect to see new estimates in another year or 2 years or on any kind of regular timeline?
So what we do plan to do is take these estimates and, again, as I said before, provide additional analyses that can focus priorities on certain food commodities or at certain points in the process of foods.
Okay, thank you.
Yep.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Betsy McKay with the Wall Street Journal. Your line is open.
Hi, thanks very much. I was wondering if we could talk about some of these specific infections, specific pathogens for a second. Are there differences between the estimates from 1999 and 2011 in numbers or prevalence of particular pathogens that changed dramatically or surprised, you know, a change that surprised you in some way? And I know we can't compare the two, but I guess what I'm talking about is there some pathogen out there that you know, one of these that's a lot, you've identified as being a lot more frequent than another, that kind of thing?
Yes, thanks for the question. So there are differences in the proportion of illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths, you know, on a pathogen by pathogen basis when you look at this estimate versus the MEAD estimate. But again, I emphasize that a lot of that difference is because of the data that we've been able to acquire that would give us more precise estimates by pathogen. But in general, what you know, when we talk about those seven pathogens that are responsible for the most illnesses, hospitalizations, and deaths, those are the pathogens that we saw also in MEAD being major pathogens.
Okay. Can I ask a quick follow-up?
Sure, go ahead.
This is based on the earlier question about the number of deaths. I wondered if you could explain the difference to us in a little more detail. I mean, I'd always thought it's pretty clear when someone dies what they die of. So how, if there's not a decline, why have we arrived at a sharply different number this time, 3,000 instead of 5,000?
I'm going to refer your question to the author, the first author of the paper, who may be best able to answer that. This is Dr. Scallon.
Okay.
There seems like two parts of your question, and maybe I'll address the one about the data sources. So we use slightly different data sources for the current estimates than were used in 99. This was based on discussions with experts and thus ended up with a lower estimated number of acute gastroenteritis hospitalizations or deaths, excuse me. You also asked about the question, you know, if somebody dies, we know what they die of. And would you like to address that one?
Is that not always the case? Maybe that's not always the case.
Well, you know, so what happens with death certificates, where a lot of this data is coming from, is that, you know, people take, you know, a best guess at the cause of illness, and they may have several. And so some of this, the issues around using death certificate data can be quite complicated.
Okay. Okay.
Next question, please.
Our next question is from Lynn Terry with the Oregonian. Your line is open.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. A question for you. You said that the data between 99 and this present data is not comparable. But then you also said there's evidence that foodborne illness has decreased, and we've seen a 20% drop in pathogens in the past 10 years. Could you talk about that?
Sure. And I just want to emphasize that when we're talking about trends and the percent decrease, that's not something that is part of these reports. What we're saying is we can't use the two reports to determine trends. So, but what can we use to determine trends? Well, there's a whole different analysis in that uses surveillance from what we call the FoodNet surveillance system. And if people are not familiar with that, that's a surveillance system in 10 sites where they actively collect the identification of certain foodborne pathogens in all the clinical laboratories in their sites. And there are sites in 10 states around the United States. It covers about 15% of the U.S. population. And we have done that kind of proactive surveillance since 1996. That surveillance system was established in order to be able to track trends over time. Each April, in the MMWR publication, we come out with the preliminary FoodNet data for the preceding year. In each April, then, we have a graphic in there that shows on a line graph, you know, by pathogen that is under FoodNet surveillance, what the trend is. If we put that information kind of together, for the major pathogens under surveillance in FoodNet, we see about a 20% decline over the past decade. Now, most of that decline occurred early in the past 10 years, and it's been more stable in the last several years.
But these are just tracking known pathogens, correct? So the overall figures could be quite different.
So those pathogens are basically nine pathogens tracked in FoodNet. Of course, of the known pathogen in these reports, we look at 31. And so, of course, the FoodNet data would feed into the overall estimates for the 9 pathogens, but other surveillance systems and other sources of data were used for the other pathogens in the 31 known pathogens included in the report. Is that clear?
Yeah, what are those 9 pathogens? Are those the 7 that you listed?
No, they're actually, there's an overlap there, but they're not exactly the same.
Okay, so, well, I don't want to get too tedious for everyone else, but...
Okay. All right. So, obviously, what I would refer you to is MMWR, April edition. You can go to the CDC.gov website for that report. It's called FoodNet Preliminary Data, and that gives you all the trend data and the information on FoodNet.
Thank you.
Operator, do we have anyone else in queue?
We have no one else at this time. I would just like to remind parties, if you would like to ask a question, to please press star 1 and record your name and affiliation at this time. We do have a question from Brenda Goodman with WebMD. Your line is open.
Hi, I just wanted to ask how confident you might be that you accounted for underreporting of foodborne illnesses. I know you said that the models adjusted for underdiagnosis and underreporting, but that's something that we as reporters have always said about foodborne illnesses, that the numbers that we're reporting are likely to be low.
So, yes, you're correct in that the estimates do include you know, a correction for under-diagnosis and under-reporting. As you can well imagine, not everybody who becomes ill sees their doctor, and even when they do, not everybody has tests done to determine what's causing the illness. So that is taken into account in the estimates. However, you know, one could look at the methods for these estimates and determine that our methods were quite conservative, and in reality, for a number of these pathogens, it could be more than we've estimated, and that has a couple of consequences. Number one, it would be more illnesses due to the known pathogens if we were actually overly conservative in our estimates. But number two, we're looking at a total pie of all gastrointestinal illnesses out there when we look at those unspecified agents category. And so if the number of known pathogen illnesses were to go up, that unspecified agent category number would come down. So there's a balance there, too.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Lisa Shearing with SIDREP News. Your line is open.
Hi, Dr. Braden. Thanks for taking our questions. On the unspecified agent report, could you tell me when the last time it was that the CDC looked at that? And also the follow-up question is, was there anything in that report that jumped out at you or surprised you? Thanks.
Yeah, so, you know, in this comprehensive analysis, the one other time that we looked at unspecified agents was in the 1999 estimates that we call the Mead estimates for the first author, Dr. Mead. So, you know, since then there have been, you know, again, better surveillance, better laboratory methods and so forth for the known pathogens. You know, we have looked for, unknown pathogens that would be part of that unspecified agent category. And there have been some discoveries made since the last report, but not discoveries that we would say would lead to a huge proportion of this unspecified of these unspecified illnesses. So we do know somewhat more about that category. There's a lot more that we really need to learn.
Thanks.
Our next question is from Leah Weinerman with PBS NewsHour. Your line is open.
Hi, yes, thanks for taking our questions. You've mentioned a few times that the methods this time were much more precise and that the estimate is much more precise. And I was wondering if you could just expand on that a little bit and explain, you know, a little bit about how the methods changed between the Mead report and this one.
Sure. I'm going to give you two examples, and these two examples that actually could account for a lot of the differences that we're seeing. So if you recall, I mentioned before about the fact that, you know, a lot of this is based upon how many people get acute gastrointestinal illnesses in the United States in any one year. And when we try to assess that number, what we do is again, through FoodNet sites, do surveys of people. You could have been one of them, you could be one of them in the future, where we call and ask a number of questions about, you know, have you had these symptoms in the past month? And then we define what constitutes a gastrointestinal illness. When the Mead paper was published, we had one set, basically, of survey data like that. It was about 9,000 interviews. And we used that data to come up with the total number of gastrointestinal illnesses out there at the time. And that was the basis for some of the estimates in the Mead report. This time around, we have about five times more of that kind of data. More than 48,000 interviews have been done. And so when we look at that data, we actually see that the number of people out there with acute gastrointestinal illnesses is actually less than what we thought before, what was estimated before. For instance, in the Mead paper, they estimated that about 8 in 10 people became ill with acute gastroenteritis each year. In this new estimate, it's about 6 in 10. Okay? So that's a big difference when you're looking at tens of millions of illnesses, and just that difference alone would account for some of the quite a bit of the difference we're seeing between Mead and the 2011. Did you follow me on those? That example?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the other example has to do with norovirus. And norovirus is a difficult one to estimate because clinical laboratories can't diagnose a norovirus infection. There is no commercial test for norovirus. However, our public health laboratories have become much better at identifying norovirus, especially in outbreaks. And this is very important because the big question is, how much of norovirus is foodborne? A lot of norovirus is due to person-to-person transmission. You hear about cruise ship outbreaks, and you hear about nursing home outbreaks. Most of that is person-to-person transmission. Well, when we did the estimates in 1999, we estimated the portion of norovirus that was foodborne. And at that point, we thought it was 40%. When we've looked at better data now with better diagnostics that we have in our public health laboratories, that percentage comes down to 26%. So that's, again, another quite a big difference that we have between the Mead and the current estimates. And I'll stop there.
Can we have one last question, please?
Our final question is a follow-up from Lindsay Layton with Washington Post. Your line is reopened, ma'am.
Thanks very much, Dr. Braden. I guess I just want to ask the one question that I think most lay people would want to know from this new data and also just from your knowledge of the Mead paper, and that is our food supply any safer today than it was 11 years ago? Can you take a stab at that?
There's been a lot of advancements in food safety over these years. You know, we have seen outbreaks, and we have seen our surveillance numbers having to do, for instance, with listeria, E. coli 0157, other pathogens. And we can see where interventions have been put in place that have made a difference. For instance, you know, we set a goal in 2000 to decrease E. coli 0157 illnesses in the United States by 50%. Last year's data in FoodNet said that we reached that goal as a Healthy People 2010 objective. So yes, there's been a number of interventions that have made a big difference. However, I would like to stress still that 1 in 6 Americans each year get ill with foodborne illnesses in the United States. You know, greater than 125,000 are hospitalized. The cost is associated with these illnesses is in the billions of dollars. 3,000 die. There's more that we need to do.
Thank you, Lindsay. As I said earlier, we have some excellent resources with this data that is available on our website that will provide you with a list of charts and details that will explain the differences, that will explain the trends. So there are some excellent resources there at that foodborne burden link. As well, we will also be posting a website shortly, so expect to receive a copy of that, and it will be available on our website as well. Thank you so much for participating today.
That does conclude today's conference call. You may now disconnect, and we thank you all for participating.
Thank you for calling the Digital Replay Service.